listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
With the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have Mr. Sam Babayan. Did I say it right?
Babayan. Yeah.
Babayan. Morning, I messed it up, man. I should have asked you that before, but you know what? With a name like Kolula, I'm so used to people mispronouncing it. I'm sure you are too. So you've been a guest before on Wake Up Hollywood. Thanks for coming back, man.
Thanks for having me back, brother. Yeah, thank you.
How have you been? You're ultra creative, and I love how much of a hustler you are in this business, because that's few and far between. Tell me what you've been up to lately.
I'm actually putting together the sketches of a new album that I will record and release in 23. I've also been a father, man. I got married and had a baby.
That's crazy. Boy or girl?
A girl. I have a little 2-year-old toddler. Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm sure that's inspiring some songs out of that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And lack of sleep.
All them things. Delirium brings creativity.
That's very true. So tell me like a little bit about your creative process when you're doing sketches for an album. Like, are you've written songs, you've written parts of songs, all of the above. Tell me a little bit about how that process works for you.
Yeah, you know, they always come in different ways and you just get them however you can, right? For this new batch, I have pieces of music that have been twirling in my head for the last year. Chord changes, a lot of, like, I know that that's a verse, chord sequence and choruses. And I'm putting together lyrics. I usually give any musical idea a title, so I know that that title is that musical idea, even if I don't have words for it yet.
That's interesting. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah. That helps me. Also, the title kind of gives me a direction as to what the theme of the song is going to be about.
Right.
And that's kind of how I'm doing it for this batch. I have like a good 10 songs already.
And do you think about like styles, genres? Do you kind of like, because you know, as an artist, you kind of want every album to sound a little bit different, but not be too far of a stretch, so it's still connected to your other records on some level.
Sure.
Tell me your sounds.
Sure. I don't really think about that, but I'm kind of lucky to not really repeat myself too much. I have one song right now that reminds me a little bit of the Everly Brothers, actually, believe it or not. It's kind of like that early Beatles Everly Brothers vibe, very melodic, major kind of happy chords. There's something that's happening that's very kind of Eastern and Middle Eastern sounding. They each kind of have their own character and rhythm and cadence and chord sequence. If I catch myself repeating something that I've done or that I'm reverting back to a tendency, I'll usually just scratch that and forget it and just ditch the whole thing, you know?
And usually you write for your band Dirty Diamond, right? Or is this for also like a solo project?
I haven't really figured that part out yet. I definitely do want to do some things newer in terms of production and approach for this new album. But usually I work under that like avatar of the Dirty Diamond, you know?
Right. And you know what? It's funny. It's like whenever I'm working on music, I'm always thinking about the record ahead of itself. And so like, I'm already thinking about the next record because I kind of have one almost in the can right now. But it's like there's always the unexpected that comes about during the process. Tell me about some of those obstacles that you find in any record that you've done where you kind of have these hiccups or creative blessings where you would never expect it to kind of like come about in the way that it did. And then all of a sudden here you are with some cool thing or some obstacle you have to go through.
Yeah. The only obstacle I can think of is just coming up with quality material. I'm way more into quality than quantity. If a friend comes up to me and says, bro, I wrote like 50 songs last month, I'll usually be a little skeptical. Like, I'll be like, are any of them good?
Right.
That's kind of like the thing for me is to take the time to let each idea marinate and make sure that it's quality, because there's so much music out there, you know?
Right.
So I have like a good 3 or 4 albums under my belt that I think are a good body of work. So I'd rather like put out one song at a time that has something really proper to offer than just put out a bunch of songs just to say I released an album, you know?
Right. I mean, what's so funny too, it's like whenever you're creating records, you're always thinking about how to release them or like how it will be received on some level. And I think that's what's stifling to a lot of creators in this market. It's like figuring out ways to kind of release the material and how to release it. Do you think that that's changed, like from going from releasing a whole album on a special day to like releasing singles? Do you think that's changed a little bit of your creative process, or is it more of like how you kind of strategically marketed your material?
Yeah, obviously we know of all the changes that have taken place in the music industry and how people are consuming music and people's attention spans and the whole streaming thing, right? We're all pretty savvy as to like what's going on now, but I kind of like that that's happened in a way that it makes me relaxed so I can focus on one song at a time.
So are you going to release one song at a time from now on? I think I'm basically going to do that. I don't know if I'm going to do a whole album anymore, but then it's like I go see shows and you're like, I buy CDs from bands I love when I go see shows, and there's nothing that replaces that. It's like, if they just had like singles for sale, I probably wouldn't buy them. But the fact that they have an album, I love driving and listening to music, and it's just not the same when it's all singles. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, like the way I would approach it and plan to approach it is like, let's say I already know that 3 of my songs that I'm going to come up with are super special and kind of, for a lack of a better word, catchy, and people would really can hang their hats on that. And of course, like if you release a song, like if I release a song, I also plan to shoot a music video that accompanies it. So I also assess like this song is good enough to, you know, spend my time and resources to shoot a music video for it. So in best case scenario, I will release 3 really awesome music videos this year with 3 singles dispersed throughout the year. But yeah, at the end of the year, I will present a full album of songs that perhaps didn't have a music video and didn't get the attention of like a single, because I actually plan to also do some covers of a couple of songs that I'm really connected to, which will be on that album. Some songs that like my friends wrote or that I co-wrote with friends, you know, there will be some other really special goodies in there that people will have the incentive to buy the album for.
Right. Yeah, I'm doing that now. I've got this blues record that I've been working on called Crossroads, and I have 5 originals and 9 covers. And I would never usually cover that many songs on a record, but it's blues. So it's like I'm covering Hendrix and like Stevie Ray Vaughan and Eric Clapton, all my favorites, to kind of show like these are the people that made me want to do this project in the first place.
Yeah.
But the weird thing I find, and we're kind of like thinking about music in parallel ways a lot, it's like now that's kind of what I think. I'm like, I think you need to release a song and release a music video, and you need to do it one at a time and kind of make that the marketing tool for each song. But it's like the problem is people's attention spans are so quick. So it's like they'll digest the song and the music video, and then it's like, okay, they're waiting for the next thing. And it's like that's literally impossible to fund constantly to make sure that you're hitting all the marks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
can I be honest with you, man? Can I be honest with you? Yeah. I'm terrible. I'm terrible at hitting the marks and meeting people's expectations and being like an amazing marketer of my music. Like, if I was really good at it, I would probably be way more well-known than I am. But really, it's come to a point where I really understand that, not to sound typical or trite, but I'm really doing this for myself.
Right.
And my own expression, and just doing stuff that comes from my heart. Even if you release one really awesome thing that comes from your heart and you feel like you're really proud of it once a year, I think that's awesome, man, you know?
Dude, Peter Gabriel would release a record once every 10 years. And I'm like,
yeah. He was on Pink Floyd, too, like towards the end, they were just like, you know. But when it would come out, it would be just
unbelievable,
a nuclear bomb, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, what's so crazy is like they were able to live off past album sales to be able to do that. Whereas artists today, I find it to be, I mean, this is one of the reasons I built this platform. It's for artists like yourself that make, because like most artists I know, they're not the best marketers. And it's like, this platform is about showcasing artists and artists to artists, because I think that's what art needs more of. It's like, I'm so done with corporate media and having like spoon-fed stuff that I just don't, that doesn't move the needle as far as like what art is doing. So I really appreciate you always creating, even if it's one song a year or 10 songs a year, because man, the music world needs real artists. And I think the art world needs real artists. So
yes, sir.
Let's showcase your first music video. What do you want to play us first?
Well, I would want to play my our latest single that came out like maybe 4 months ago called I Come Alive. That's the first thing that I would show. And it was produced by me and my bandmate Fernando and my friend Sebu Simonian from Capital Cities, Safe and Sound. And yeah. And I shot this music video in Armenia.
Oh, I think I've seen this, which I love. I love this music
video. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And this is the first one I'd want to play.
All right, here comes. Sam, you there? Not you. what was the name of the song? Sam just asked which one.
I Come Alive. It's the first
one. I Come Alive, first video.
Location makes no difference. There's a space for you and I in eternal time. Station connection resides in all dimensions. Home is where your heart is now and occupy my mind. I come alive, 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 alive. Every time a space for you and I in eternal time. This ancient connection resides in all dimensions. Home is where your heart is now and you occupy mine. I come alive, I come alive, I come alive, 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 alive. Every time that I see you, I come alive. Come alive, alive, alive. Every time that I'm with you, let's make a connection, a telepath connection, a mother-like connection.
La 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 la
man, it spreads like fire in a minute. There's a space for you and I in eternal time. This ancient connection resides in multi-dimensions. Home is where your heart is now, and you occupy mine. I come alive, I come alive, I come alive, alive, alive. Every time that I see you, I come alive, I come alive, I come alive, alive, alive.
So slamming, dude. I love that. I've seen that video many times, and I love it. What a catchy riff, hook, vocal, production, all of it. It's just so slamming, dude. Tell me what went into the creative process of it.
Well, I wrote that song 3 years ago when I flew to Armenia. That's where I was born and raised, you know?
Right.
That's where I'm from, and it's my homeland. I wrote it just when I landed in the airport over there after a 14-hour flight. I actually had fasted on the airplane ride, so I was like super hungry and super kind of tuned into something. And I wrote the song kind of about, I come alive when I see you, like when I arrive in Armenia, it's like my motherland and I'm totally vibrating with the soil and that connection. But I also wrote it kind of remotely about my wife who was still back in LA. And it's kind of like we're connected no matter how far we are. So it's kind of about both connection to the motherland or a connection to someone that you love and that feeling of that you are connected with someone or someplace no matter where you are, that kind of vibe. And then a year later, a war broke out. Where the neighboring country of Azerbaijan basically attacked Armenia for some political crazy shit going on. And I kind of wanted to do something nice and to put my country on the map a little bit and bring attention and maybe to spend my money in Armenia doing art. And, you know, so I paired up with an amazing director during the quarantine, and just as the quarantine was kind of landing, I flew to Armenia for 2 weeks to shoot that music video, which was kind of tying the song back to like where I wrote it. And maybe I had exhausted some of my creativity here in SoCal, you know, like I already have a desert video,
right.
And you know, like all the locations here.
Well, it's so unique. What's so great about the song is you are from Armenia, and it's like a love letter to Armenia. I mean,
I
can guarantee most people don't picture what Armenia looks like, and now they can with a video like this. So it's so a beautiful love letter to your homeland, dude.
Yeah, that was part of the intention, too, was to show, like, all my friends here, like, what Armenia looks like. And what the video shows is only, like, one sliver of how beautiful it is there, but it's what I could do, you know.
And did you do it with, I assume you had drones, and tell me like what the production kind of entailed. How many days did you shoot, and how long did it take to edit? How long did the whole thing kind of take?
Yeah, that whole thing was fun, man. I was actually convinced that it would be a 2-day shoot, but we actually did that in 1 day from sunrise to sunset.
Wow, that's
It was a 14-person production. There was like a trailer that we were all in. There was that classic Eldorado car that was brought. I'm actually driving on a tow bed. I'm not actually driving a lot of the scenes.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy.
There's scenes where I am driving it that you can see I'm obviously driving on the highway with the drone following. But where I'm singing to the camera, there was like a cameras mounted on the car. And I didn't want to crash this really precious antique car.
Right.
So they put it on a tow bed. So there was like a tow bed. There was like the dancers and catering. And it was a huge thing, man. It was like a 14-person crew. If you go on my Instagram, there's actually a video of the making of where you can see I have a cousin from Russia that flew out to make a making of video for that, which looks just as good as the video itself, honestly. Yeah, it was a lot of fun that one day. It was wild. And the editing was challenging because I came back to LA and we did all of that remotely with the editors over there in Armenia. And I'm a little bit of I'm picky about like what I want. So I wasn't a very easy customer to please. I had a lot of like revisions and stuff. And they were kind of like, hey, well, we ran out of resources. You know, we can't edit anymore. And I was like, here's some more money. Edit the damn thing. Like, because, you know, you're going to have to live with that peace forever and you want to be happy. And
isn't it also super funny how, like, you know, when you do a song, you kind of know, like, okay, this is what it's going to be. This is how it's going to sound. A music video can have like 10 different versions. You can have literally 10 yeah. different versions of an edit, and it's saying the same thing, but it's like there's only like one version that feels right. I went through it with myself, and it's complicated. That's why I wanted to know the editing process, because that's part of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, like as I've gotten a little older and I've done it a few more times, I see the vision very clearly in my head, and I'm pretty good at the flow and the pacing of the edit and how things look. I'm pretty savvy with that kind of stuff. And it's cool how a musician can dive into like the film world temporarily. And that's a lot of fun to go into like cinematics and how visual. But I trust myself a lot because I've made a lot of mistakes before, man. And you learn so much from previous videos. And when you watch and you're like, oh, I could have done this and I could have done that. And it could have been like this. So I think the more you do it, the more we close the gap between how we imagine it and the outcome, you know?
And there's always going to be like some kind of a surprise. That's a good surprise, that when they do the edit and maybe it's a shot you didn't think would come out a certain way.
Sure.
When it does, it's just like, oh, this is so cool. I think that's like the beauty of making music videos, because they're like short films. They're like a short film that just basically tells a really quick story, but it does it in such a cool visual way. I kind of feel like it's the ultimate medium in some ways, because you only have 3 or 4 minutes to tell the story. You know what I mean? And it's all done to music. So kudos, man. Kudos. I love that. And did you kind of have an idea of like what you wanted the video to be when you went there? Or what was the director kind of like, this is what I see? Tell me how that process went down.
It was definitely a collaboration. Like the dancers were his idea, and me doing some of those silly things that I do were his idea. He insisted that they keep it fun and silly, because I wanted to be like way more cooler and he wanted to be a little silly and playful. But my idea was to capture these really beautiful, ordinary things that I see in Armenia. No, not ordinary, like ordinary things that people do there that are extraordinary to me. Like there are actually shots that I never got. Like I wanted to show like a woman sweeping the floor of the sidewalk in the morning, and like a little cat drinking milk in an alleyway from a little bowl, and children running around in a fountain, which is something that happens in Armenia a lot, and like two old men playing backgammon. But then like I ended up playing that backgammon scene with that old man, so like I got that. But yeah, like my idea was to show beautiful things from my perspective that are ordinary things that happen in a daily life, you know?
You know, backgammon's the royal game of India. Just throw that out there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And I'm a huge fan of Le Majun. You know Le Majun. Right?
Le Majun, yes.
Yeah, dude, that stuff is the best. I'm sure you just had – what did you eat there? I saw something that you were eating. I was like, I got to ask him what that was. It looked like some cheese pastry or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like that thing that I'm breaking is called a gata, and it's essentially like a sweet bread, kind of a bakery that's quite common and prevalent in Armenia. There's some like lavash, which is like the flat bread on my hand. I'm juggling a couple of apples or pomegranates and just kind of showing the fertility of the place. Like not the fertility, but It's very like full of water and trees and fruit and abundance. It's a really beautiful, fertile place.
You're going to have to text me the places that you go for Armenian food here, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I have a couple Armenian friends, and they told me some places like for Le Mignon where you just get it right off the oven. I was like, oh, man, this is a gold mine, dude. But
for sure.
I love all that stuff.
We can catch some dinner at a nice place one of these days.
Yeah. I'm proud and I'm down, man. We should talk about the show we're going to do, man.
Okay.
All right, so let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
I don't know. Let me see what I – you can play Love and Light or Going Through – I don't know.
Yeah, let's do Love and Light. Let's hear.
Okay, let's do that. That's kind of cool, yeah.
All right, here's Love and Light.
I've awakened to my life again, conquered myself and rehearsed my very death a thousand times over. Heard slaughters and genocide. I trudged the terrain that most choose to avoid. Into the void I go. But at the end of it all, behind the wall, is my smile full of love and light. At the end of it all, down the hall, quantum field of love and light. Your love and light is all that I saw. I was tortured and paralyzed, persecuted and crucified. I died. My impaled hands, I cried. I was enslaved, but I reconciled. I dive into pain the most choose to avoid. Into the void I go. But at the end of the ride, when I had arrived, master mount of love and light. At the end of the ride, when I had arrived, the quantum field of love and light. Your love and light is all that I saw. Into myself again, conquered my life and rehearsed my very death a thousand times over. At the end of my leash, when I was released, a vast amount of love and light. At the end of the leash, when I was released, all I found was love and light. Your love and light is all that I, all that I saw.
Very cool, man. Very cool. I was wondering, I'm like, is this early morning or this is sunset? Because I was like, I know these musicians didn't wake up at 6 a.m. to do this video.
Hey, so man, you'd be surprised.
Was it sunset in Joshua Tree?
That was Mojave Desert. It's kind of cool to like watch that because I haven't watched it for a while. It was kind of fun for me to revisit that. It's such a different kind of a mood. It's a little darker and a little more brooding or something like that. Yeah, that was in Mojave Desert. And that's such a different contrast. That was just directed by and shot by one person. A director named Martin Yernazian. He's from Argentina, but he lives here. And it was just me and him. And I think my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, was like our assistant. And it was the three of us, you know.
That's awesome.
And it's cool because, you know, my bandmates are in that video too. And it kind of shows everybody, the whole gang. And yeah, and that was more of a sunset.
That's what I assumed, but I was like, man, maybe they got up early and it was, you know, because
we did get up early.
Has that one look in the sky? Like, it could be sunrise. It could be sunrise. And I've had each of your band members as guests on Wake Up Hollywood, and love those cats, dude. You got such a great band, great cats.
Yeah,
tell me about like the creative process when you were coming up with that together as a band, or did you write it and then bring it in? Like, how did it work?
Man, if you listen to the lyrics of that song, it's actually kind of heavy, talking about some heavy stuff of essentially like ancestral healing and the trauma that can be released from, in a way that like humanity is kind of a traumatized species, and all the things that we've collectively gone through, like wars and genocide and Holocaust and slavery and all the things that have happened to like the Native Americans and African Americans and all of that, Jews, fucking Armenians, all the inquisitions and like the wars and stuff. So all of that, it's kind of the concept that all of that is kind of stored in our cellular memory, in our bodies, right? Because we inherit all of the gifts that come from our ancestors, but also all of the trauma. And that song is just like about releasing that like pain and all of that and exercising it out. So I wrote pretty much most of that song on my own. But I flushed it out with the band, and you know, they added a lot of like the rhythm and like the groove. I mean,
you definitely tell it's like got a cool band arrangement. So that's why I also wanted to know, like, did that influence the song, or and what a heavy thing to write.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for reminding me. Actually, what happened is that, like that kind of beat was something that we were jamming on at like a band rehearsal, and it was just that, it was just like that beat, and then I liked it. So in a way, I think of that as like, you give me a fabric or a piece of cloth, and then I'll go home and I'll fashion like a pair of clothing out of that, you know. So wow. You give me that groove, and I'll go home and I'll start pretty much embodying that cadence and that rhythm, and I'll write my song to that. And then I'll bring it back in a more complete form. And then we kind of, everyone does their thing on it.
Yeah. What's so cool too is like all those guys, they play with so many different people and huge artists. And it's like an all-star band, which is really great. And then the song also, it's like, it is not like a cookie cutter song. You can just tell there's arrangement, there's lyric, there's depth, there's great melody. It's kind of like got this brooding dark melody, but then it has like a lift. So, I mean, it's really like the whole package. I really love all of your originals, man. They're just so tight, man. It's just, it's creative. It's hyper creative, and it's well arranged and kind of well put together. Do you find that you put a lot of pressure on yourself to like make it that standard, or do you feel like that's just who you are and that's how you organize your creative ideas?
Yeah, you know, I avoid all the typical G, C, D stuff, you know, the cowboy chords and like the typical, you know, like a lot of a lot of guitar players, like you hand them a guitar and then they'll just play a pentatonic scale, you know. It's like there's so many, and I love that stuff, man. Don't get me wrong. I love the blues. Let me get that clear. But there's so many other modes and scales, you know. I mean, you know, I mean, like I listened to a lot of Indian music when I was growing up.
Dude, they changed the scales. That's what's dark.
Yeah, like Pakistani, like Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. You know, I listened to a lot of flamenco and gypsy music from Romania, Persian music and Armenian music, but also all the slide guitar, Grateful Dead, blues vibes, all of that. So it's like East and West. So when I'm writing a song, I'm trying to find a piece of gem that has not been touched, you know. Although sometimes I used to feel like, oh man, the Beatles and the Stones and the Led Zeppelin and Hendrix wrote all the fucking amazing songs and now there are no more awesome songs left to write, like F those guys. but there are, and music is infinite, and if I just explore a little bit and kind of dig around, I can find interesting things. And I'm really trying to just keep myself interested, right? And I'm trying to find a color that's not been touched or done. And then I feel like if I write really cool and interesting songs for myself, then other really good musicians will want to play with me and be in a band with me, which has been the case. You know, I have such amazing bandmates and they want to play in our band because I bring in interesting and different things. The pressure, sometimes I feel that pressure that I need to come up with something really good.
Right.
But that pressure is not really conducive to creativity, man.
That's why I asked.
I shake off the pressure and meditate and clear my antennas and just find joy and playfulness. Those things are already in me, you know.
Well, there's two ways. Like this is the way I think about pressure. It's like there's the pressure of getting it done, which can be stifling, and then there's a pressure of having a deadline, and sometimes that can work for you, and you can create a diamond, you know, to quote the Dirty Diamond, you can create a diamond out of pressure. I mean, you need it, but sometimes it can definitely be stifling. So I kind of like, I feel like there's good pressure and bad pressure, and you have to kind of like know which one you're kind of putting on yourself. And I think that can be hard to identify, but I think that creative process sometimes, I think it's really great when it can work for you and you create something kind of like, oh, I need to get this done. And this is what it is, because you had that pressure instead of, oh, I can do it in 6 months, because there's something to that too, where you can procrastinate something that's great, you know, that you start with a great riff and then it never gets written. There's tons of songs that never get to the forefront, you know, or to the surface because of that. So I think there's definitely a good pressure and a bad pressure. I love that you're willing to shake it off, which I do too. But there's also this other side of me. It's like, oh, I need to identify, what kind of pressure is this? Is this like, I need to do my best work under pressure kind of pressure? Or is it, oh my God, it's just stressing me out pressure. Mm-hmm. And I think one is debilitating and one is almost an enhancement to creating, you know? And I feel like all artists kind of go through that, because there's going to be a point where you have a deadline or you have things that just have to be met creatively. So I think it's a fascinating concept to kind of how artists do use pressure and how you deal with it.
Sure.
You seem to be doing great stuff, you know, no matter. Do you kind of make deadlines for yourself, or do you kind of like let the art kind of make its own deadline?
I often use a show that I have coming up as a deadline to finish one or two or three songs so that I can show it at the show and offer something new. Yeah. So I do use shows most of the time that are on the calendar as deadlines to finish. That's incentive and inspires me to finish a song so I can show it to my friends and my fans. Yeah.
That's super cool. Let's play something else. What do you want to play us next?
We can play, speaking of blues, we can play Death of My Ego live at the Troubadour.
All right, here it is. Death of My Ego, live at the Troop. Played slide. That's awesome.
Yeah,
bitch, dude, slide guitar. I find it to be such a bitch, man. It's such a, it's an animal. It's an animal of its own. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's a beast.
So tell me a little bit about the influence that came, that became like a bluesy rock song.
Man, that whole bluesy thing is like a huge part of my DNA, you know. When I was a kid, I was like super into like the Black Crowes, you know. And I still am. Like I said, like Grateful Dead, Eric Clapton, all of that, Stevie Ray Vaughan, all of that, you know, even the old blues. I love to play, like, I have a couple of resonator guitars that I play,
Yeah.
and I'm totally into that. Like, I haven't really showcased that in my albums, but it's a lot of what I do at home and when I'm at parties and chilling with my friends. And yeah, the blues is like a huge part of my thing. And yeah, that song is just about it's about actually me actually going to like an ayahuasca ceremony, man, and completely having this like super ego melt where just like my, yeah, it's just like everything I'm saying in that song is actually a testimony of something that actually happened to me over a really interesting trip and a weekend that I had. And I went home, and when I got home, it was like a Tuesday evening, and I was doing my laundry, you know, and I literally saw a spider in my washing machine, and I went into my studio and I wrote that song basically in the duration that that song is. I wrote that song in like 5 minutes.
Wow.
That song actually wrote me. I don't really think I had anything to do with it. I just sat down and that thing came out of me, you know, and that was it.
Tell me about like what it was that made it so significant about the death of your ego, or like how you kind of feel that helps you become a better creator.
I think you know, surrendering to what is a huge part of it. When we surrender, we just like release, and it kind of loosens the density of things. And when we surrender and flow, that's when a lot of creative stuff comes out. Yeah, also like it was just like a funny thing to say, like the death of my ego, you know. It was just kind of a interesting and funny, had a funny ring to it, because we can't really ever kill our ego, right? Maybe we can find the volume knob on it and like adjust it and turn it down a little bit and modify it and use it when it's needed, because it's a tool, it's part of our survival, of course. But and yeah,
But
like finding.
it's interesting because it's like I feel like the times that I feel most alive is when I'm most present and there is no ego. It's like you're having to just release it, you know? And it's like I wish I could do that all the time, but it's not always practical because it's just not reality, you know? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it
No,
was.
you added a really awesome thing. That's totally that you're on point for sure. Yeah, like in our daily weekday kind of structural survival of every day, we need an amount of that to get by through the day and to not be pushed around and all of that. But when we find those moments of serenity, surrender, in meditation space, or in a ceremony, or when we go into nature, or when we're with loved ones where we can just like let it go and we don't need to defend ourselves. Yeah, I think that's like a lot of where it comes in handy, right? It's like with our family and our loved ones and our close friends, when we don't have to defend ourselves all the time,
Right.
when we can just feel safe to let them have it. Like, yeah, you won, you know. Like, I don't need to defend myself, like whatever, you know. So yeah, it comes useful in many ways and many forms.
That's
it's just
awesome.
it's just a nice thing to just even contemplate on that. Like, some people don't even know that their ego needs an adjustment, you know.
Well, most people act on it, you know what I mean? And it's like, I find that music, the one thing that I think makes me want to stay with music all the time is because it's always humbling. Because there's always somebody that's so talented that you're going to see on YouTube, go see a show. And I'm like, there's room for everybody. But in your mind, it's like, man, you can never get too high, whatever you create, because there's always somebody creating something that's just unreal, you know? And I find that, like, the more I find myself centered by that, then I'm able to keep creating. You know, it's like I'm not letting the creation get past my love of creating. And I think that's what ego can do. So I think it's a really interesting topic to write a song about it. You know, it's
pretty cool. Also another aspect to that, right? Which is like, let's say you see one of your like favorite classic rock musical heroes, and if they're humble and they're sweet and you approach them and they're cool, you just love them so much more, right?
Yes.
But
yes.
If your favorite hotshot guitar player is like totally egotistical, doesn't even want to look at you and acts a certain way, it's kind of a turnoff, you know?
Yeah, so, you're like, you're not that great.
Oh, man, I love your music. Yes. So much 20 minutes ago.
I got to meet Paul McCartney in the studio when we were both working on records.
That's amazing.
And he was so humble, and it just made me think nobody deserves to be an asshole if this guy is not an asshole. Because if you're a Beatle and you're not an asshole, dude, nobody else can come close to that level of success or impact or just longevity as far as influence, you know. So
yeah, the good ones are always so sweet and humble, and like the real ones, you know.
Yeah,
I think the ones that are ego is like they're acting on from their own wounds. And they have something to protect. They think they have something to protect, which is like, you don't really need to prove anything, man. Like, love is already there, you know?
So. Yeah, that's a great way to put it into perspective. Let's play something else. What do you want to play us last?
It might be fun to play Going Through Changes with Andre Day. Andre Day is like an awesome singer. I'm sure a lot of people know of her, and she's a great friend of our band, and our drummer Shay worked with her for a long time and still does on some measure. And here we go.
Here we go.
Very cool, man. Beautiful video. So I assume you just had somebody videotaping the session that you guys were doing, and then you kind of just like spliced pictures, or how did you kind of come about with this music video?
Yeah, that was like, I would say more of technically like a lyric video. But if you go on YouTube and just put the Dirty Diamond and changes, just changes, a studio video will come out of us, just the band playing that song in the recording studio, with actually Durga McBroom from Pink Floyd doing background vocals. That was like a version of the song. That's one. That's another version of the song where I'm doing all the vocals, Durga's just doing background, and it's in a different key. But I originally wrote that song kind of like, you know, Gimme Shelter by the Stones. It's like a duet with like a dope blues mama that's just going to be wailing in response. And at the time when we were recording in the studio, I didn't really know who was going to do it. But I told the guys, let's record an instrumental version in the key so that one day we will find that blues mama and she will do the vocals. And actually they were hesitant. And I was like, no, we got to do it. Let's play it in this other key. So we recorded the song in a whole other key. And that ended up being the version that Andra Day later on dropped the vocals on. But she was so busy, you know, she's kind of a big star and kind of a big deal and all that. So she was so busy, she couldn't do a music video with us. So we kind of spliced that footage that we had of us playing in the studio with some like pretty shots of her.
Well, it's cool though. I mean, it like does the job, and really it's like what I find, it's the documenting that you connected with her and made some music together. I think that's like, I do that too on a lot of records. I got one of the Rolling Stones, Chuck Lavelle, to play on my new blues record.
And oh, nice.
Which is so crazy, but I've always wanted to meet him. I still haven't met him, but yet we're on a record together. You know what I mean? And that's just like how the modern music industry is. You know, it's like,
I want to hear your new album when it comes out, man.
I'll definitely send it to you, man. It's something special to me, and it's something I've always wanted to do. And we share a parallel. It's like, you know, I was doing a lot of world music for a long time, and I still am. And on the last two records, it's kind of like I circled back because rock music is what made me want to be in a rock band, you know? So I'm like, I need to write music that is like relevant to this culture too, because some of that's dying. And so like, it's made me kind of like go back to the blues, go back to like Southern rock. A lot of the Allman Brothers are kind of like huge influences on what I do. So the last record I did with the band is very rock heavy and soul heavy. And then this one's like very blues heavy. So I think it's important just to always keep everybody guessing, keep yourself guessing too. So I think you'll appreciate it. But man, dude, you are such a powerhouse in creativity. We've definitely got to collaborate on some songs, man. We talked about this before, but we got to do some shows together. We got to do some songs together. But I love how creative you are and how you're always putting out material, always putting out albums. Never stop, man. Tell me where people can find you and what's next for you guys.
Find us. You can find us on Spotify, on YouTube. If you just punch in The Dirty Diamond with no S at the end, it's just one diamond, The Dirty Diamond. There's a thedirtydiamond.bandcamp.com where you can purchase our music, which is really helpful. It's kind of acting as our website right now, but if you punch it in Spotify or anything, if you just punch in The Dirty Diamond, you'll find us there. If you want to connect with me on my Instagram personal page, it's Simon Diamond One. So at Simon Diamond One. And I'm playing an acoustic, full band acoustic show at the Hotel Cafe on January 21st. It's a Saturday night in the new year, 2023. That's the only show I have on the calendar right now, but currently booking some new dates and stuff. And we'll talk about hopefully doing some things together this year as well.
Well, dude, Sam, thank you so much for being a guest again on Wake Up Hollywood. Next time we'll have to do something together that we showcase and put on the show. But on behalf of Sam and myself and the other Sam, We wish you a very happy holiday season. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next week. Peace and love.
Much love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.